this time, let us give ear to Brother Roger Lewis from the Christ Church New Zealand Ecclesia, who brings us the words of exhortation entitled, How to Practice Diligence, based upon our reading in Ecclesiastes chapter 11.
Well, thank you, Brother Chairman, and my dear brothers. How appropriate, then, as we begin a Bible school, we withdraw from those things that are about us on every hand to, as our Brother Chairman has said in his opening prayer, to renew our vows, our covenants, to remember the covenants before our God. Not just the covenants that God has made with us, but those covenants that we have made before the Father, that we should be committed to unto him, and that we ought to show dedication in his service. Our brother said in his opening prayer, he made plea concerning the fact that we ought to manifest the spirit and the character of our God. And by way of exhortation then this morning, we're going to look at that spirit as it is set forth before us in Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verses 1 to 6. I'd like you to turn with me, please, to that passage, because here are some marvellous thoughts that I think can lift our hearts and minds as we prepare now for the benefits of the Bible school that lie ahead of us. How valuable to assemble at the beginning of it all that we should, as it were, prepare our minds before the Father, so that out of the studies and out of our fellowship that we enjoy the one with the other, we might go forth from this place strengthened to better manifest him in our daily life. Now, in Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verses 1 to 6, we have what we might call really some proverbs of Solomon concerning sowing. They're farming metaphors, you see, and they're all about the spirit of sowing in life. And what we're going to find is that here is the spirit of Solomon, but out of that we believe there is wonderful exhortation for us this evening. Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verse 1 says, Cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Cast thy bread upon the waters. Of course, it's been said that in the Middle East, of course, there were these large, flat, round cakes that were baked. And that perhaps a baked bread like that could be perhaps in some way thrown upon the waters and it would float and possibly return after many days. Obviously that's not what the proverb is about, is it? If such a piece of bread was able to be returned after many days, it would no doubt be singularly unpalatable. There's obviously something symbolic here, isn't there, in the bread that's cast upon the waters. The bread here, we believe, in this verse, stands for the principle of a person's substance in life, whatever that might be, their resources, their possessions, their abilities, their time, their energy. The bread represents not just the seed of the word, but our whole spirit of commitment, whatever it might be, cast it upon the waters, says Ecclesiastes 11, verse 1. For thou shalt find it after many days. Now, I want you to think of the bread for a moment in the context of the seed of the farmer. You see, it's the farmer, isn't it, that goes forth and by way of symbol he casts his bread upon the waters when he goes forth to sow his seed. He commits his seed on a journey of faith. He hopes that he will receive it back after many days, multiplied up into a harvest as a result of his endeavours, and he's got to be prepared to commit his resources in faith to that final end. In fact, you'll remember the words of the psalm, which said in the 126th psalm, remember these words, uttered, we believe, in the context of Hezekiah's life, He that goeth forth weeping, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. So you see, the sower goes forth to sow, bearing precious seed. He's got to commit himself. But his desire is for that day, his hope is for that day, when he will come back bearing the precious sheaves of harvest that he has received as a result. So a farmer sows that he might reap. He's the one who sends forth his bread upon the waters. Now, you see the word cast in the first verse here. You see, I think in the English we tend to think of the word cast as casting something away. But that's not what it means, you see, in the Hebrew. The Hebrew word shalak means to send forth, not to throw away. You see, the farmer sends forth his seed on a mission. There's an objective here. He's not casting it away. He's sending it on a journey in the hope of a harvest to come. In fact, you see what the margin says? It says, cast thy bread upon the face of the waters. Not just the waters, but upon the face of the waters. Now, that's interesting, isn't it? Because there's a Bible echo. What does that take us back to in mind? Why, this is Genesis chapter 1, isn't it? Let's come back to Genesis just for a moment. Isn't this the echo of Ecclesiastes chapter 11? Who was the one who first sent forth their spirit upon the face of the waters? From whence comes the spirit of sowing and the lesson of giving? Isn't this the very principle, the very character of God himself? In Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, we're told, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, says Genesis. So you see, it was God who first sent forth his word upon the face of the waters of the earth, that one day he might receive it back after many days, multiplied up into a harvest of men and women who all think and act like him. He sent forth his word, his spirit brooded on the face of the waters. God was a sower, brothers and sisters. And so when Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 1 tells us to take up the spirit of sowing in our lives, in the matters of the truth, what he's really asking us to do is to take up the very spirit of Almighty God himself. This is the manifestation of the Father's own spirit. He first sowed at the beginning of creation that he might receive harvest. Isaiah chapter 55. Here's another related thought, of course. And again, a well-known passage, but very relevant to this particular idea of the sowing of the seed, the casting forth of the bread, that it might be returned after many days. Here's the seed, you see, that God sowed when first his spirit brooded on the face of the waters. We're told in Isaiah chapter 55 and verses 10 and 11, "For as the rain cometh down, and the snow from heaven, and returneth not thither, but watereth the earth, and maketh it bring forth and bud, that it may give seed to the sower, and bread to the eater, so shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper in the thing whereto I sent it." So God, you see, has the objective of a harvest in due time from the sending forth of his word like seed sown. You see the word sent in verse 11 there at the end of the verse? Do you know that's the same word translated cast in Ecclesiastes chapter 11 verse 1. So we come back then to Ecclesiastes, and we learn this lesson, you see, from the first verse, is that life in the truth is all about sowing to the future. Life in the truth is not really so much about today as about sowing for tomorrow. And we've got to learn to sow with the spirit of commitment and sacrifice, because that's the very character that Almighty God himself has shown. So with what spirit then should we sow in the things of the truth? Well, says Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 2, we should learn to give a portion to 7 and also to 8, says the verse. "For thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth." Give a portion to 7 and also to 8, says Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 2. What a strange phrase. And yet it's found in Micah chapter 5 in a very similar sort of way, and in a way I think that illustrates for us what the meaning of the verse is. Give a portion to 7 and also to 8. Well, a very similar phrase is found in Micah chapter 5. And there we're told in the age to come, when the latter day Assyrian comes into the land, we're told this in the 5th verse of the prophet Micah, "This man shall be the peace when the Assyrian shall come into our land, And when he shall tread in our palaces, then we shall raise against him 7 shepherds and 8 principal men. Now, of course, the word 7 in the Hebrew is one of the numbers that we know to be a number of completeness or fullness. So also the number 3, the number 7, the number 10, the number 12. But 7, you see, is being used here in the sense of that which is complete. So if 7 is enough, then 8 must symbolize that which is beyond and more than enough. So the promise, you see, of Micah chapter 5 and verse 5 is that when the latter-day Assyrian treads in the land, the glorious land of promise, that there will be raised against him enough men and more than enough men to overcome him and drive him forth from the land, 7 shepherds. And so that when you see in Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verse 2 it says, give a portion to 7 and also to 8, really what the meaning of the verse is, that this is the spirit with which we ought to sow in life. We ought to sow enough and more than enough. In other words, farmers learn that they have to sow with generosity and liberality. Do you know why a farmer knows that? Because the farmer knows, says verse 2, that there are many things that come upon harvests that are described here as evils. Thou knowest not what evil shall come upon the earth. You see, there are lots of evils that can afflict the sowing of seed, aren't there? Why, the Bible itself says that the birds could come, that tares could grow, that fire could break out, that locusts could devour, that thieves could steal, that wind could destroy, that rain could crush, that blight could wipe out. There are so many evils that can come upon that which has been sown, and a farmer knows that. So he knows that he must sow with generosity and liberality because of that which may fail in his crop. There's a largeness of heart when it comes to the distribution of his resources. Come and have a look at the 2nd of Corinthians chapter 9. You see, this is a spirit of life that we're talking about here. Our whole attitude to the truth should be that we sow in generosity and liberality. In the 2nd of Corinthians chapter 9, which by the way is one of 2 wonderful chapters that the apostle wrote on the Jerusalem Poor Fund, he says that we ought to have this spirit with regard to how we sow in the truth in our lives. 2nd of Corinthians 9 and verse 6. But this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. You see, 2 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 6 is one of these obvious verses, isn't it, that we know so well. You see, everybody knows that, don't they, that if we sow sparingly, that we will, well, we will reap sparingly, won't we? And if we sow bountifully, then we can expect a bountiful harvest. In other words, that there is a fundamental law of nature between what we reap and what we sow. In other words, we can't expect to reap more than we've sown, can we? If a farmer's only sown one field, he can never expect to reap in 3. A farmer knows that. And we do too, in a sense. And yet the funny thing about it, brothers and sisters in life, is that we somehow imagine that we can secretly defeat the laws of nature in our lives. You see, what the apostle says is that if you sow sparingly, you cannot possibly reap bountifully, but somehow we think we can. That's the great challenge, you see, of the truth, isn't it? You see, this is a divine principle for how we approach everything in life, not just the truth, but life itself. Our attitude to schoolwork, our attitude to study, our attitude to marriages, our attitude to family life, the discharge of our work responsibilities, the happy organization of ecclesial activities. Everything's related to this principle. With what spirit do we sow?
young men have dreams. They dream of a lovely young sister that they will marry, and of a wonderful marriage that will follow. Little children that will sprout up like olive plants. The readings at night time and the wise counsel that he will give as a father to the children, instructing them out of the gems of the truth. What a wonderful dream it is, except it isn't just a dream. It's only an illusion. Because you see, if a young man has never sown as a young man in the way of Bible study, then he never will bring forth gems to his children. It's just a dream. We can never hope to reap a bountiful harvest spiritually if we've never sown one, says Paul. And yet somehow we imagine that for doing very little in the truth, for giving very little effort to the truth, that somehow we're going to have this enormous spiritual harvest at the end of it all. And Paul says you can't do that. You see, there's a fundamental law of nature. How you sow is how you reap. Bountiful to bountiful, sparing to sparing. And so therefore the exhortation, you see, of Ecclesiastes 11, verse 2 is, learn to be generous and liberal with how you sow, to whatever it is in life that you're giving yourself to, but especially to the things of the truth. The truth will only prosper in our lives if we've given ourselves to them passionately in that spirit of generosity in sowing to the things of the Spirit. And you see, Ecclesiastes verse 3 tells us why it is that we need to learn that spirit. Now here's a strange verse. Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verse 3 says, you see, if the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And if the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there it shall be. You know, I've often thought, brothers and sisters, what a marvelous verse this is. You see, we read this verse and we're puzzled, really, aren't we? You see what it says? If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And we say, yes, that's right. And if the tree falls, says the proverb, if it falls toward the south or toward the north, why, says the proverb, you know, in the very place where the tree falls, that's where it shall be. And we say, yes, that's where it would be, wouldn't it, if it fell there. So what does verse 3 mean? Well, you see, I think what verse 3 means is this. You see, imagine that we're the farmer and that we've sown our seed. And the harvest has sprung up, and the grain has ripened and swelled. It's almost ready for harvest. And just at the wrong time, of course, we're told, you know, that in the days of Samuel, which we'll come to later, that he called thunderclouds and rain in the time of harvest, and that was unheard of in Israel. You just don't get that, you see. Now imagine that the farmer is nearing harvest, and along loom the dark clouds, the rain clouds. You see, what verse 3 is saying is that the farmer says, I hope they're not rain clouds. Oh, yes, they are. I hope they don't come over. Oh, yes, they have come over my particular farm. I hope they don't fall on my grain. Oh, yes, they will, says the proverb. Life is like that, you see. If a tree is going to fall, says verse 3, you know, it'll tend to fall in the worst possible place, right across your best vines. Just where you didn't want it to fall. In other words, verse 3 is telling us that the farmer may well be subject to time and chance in weather and misadventure. But he's got to learn to carry on in spite of those things with courage and endurance. The lesson of this verse is that we've got to sow with patience and endurance in the things of the truth. The lesson of verse 3 is that even in the truth, life is full of both triumph and tragedy. Even in the truth, life is full of both joy and despair. Even in the truth, there are rain clouds and falling trees that come at the worst possible time. And the farmer knows to accept that. And to sow all the same with patience and endurance And we've got to learn that too. We probably belong to an age, don't we? To an age and to a world that gives up at the slightest difficulty, the slightest obstacle. The truth's all about patience, about pressing on. And it's so important that we do, because you see, verse 4 says, look what happens if we don't learn that principle. Because verse 4 says, he that observeth the wind shall not sow, and he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. Or as the Jerusalem Bible says, keep watching the wind, and you will never sow. Stare at the clouds, and you will never reap. You see, the lesson of verse 4 is that if the farmer is overcautious or easily discouraged, then he will never, ever accomplish anything. There's always a reason why we really shouldn't sow, says the proverb. There's always an excuse we can find, if we want to, why we really shouldn't sow just now. It's too wet, it's too windy, it's too cold, it's unsuitable. There's a reason why we shouldn't. You know, sometimes there are people like this in ecclesial life, aren't there? I don't think this is a good time to have a special lecture. I don't know if we've got the resources to be able to do it within the eclipse. 20,000 pamphlets, you say. Oh, I don't think we could get that many out. Whatever the thing is to be done, somehow these are the people who are always observing the wind, staring at the clouds, and who always have a reason why we oughtn't to sow. The lesson of verse 4 is that the ideal conditions for engaging in God's service often don't come at all, but we press on all the same. We sow despite adverse conditions. How often, brothers and sisters, have you been asked to do something in ecclesial life? And to be really honest, it came at the worst possible time. When your mind and your life was full of 1,000 other things, and you were asked to do something for the sake of the truth, you see. How easy it would be for us to go back, to step back into the excuse of Ecclesiastes 11, verse 4. There's wind, there's clouds, we ought not to sow. The lesson of this verse is that the truth is all about earnestness and zeal. The world is all about mediocrity. The world is all about being average. The world is all about not striving. The truth is all about excellence. The truth is all about sowing bountifully until our hands are exhausted. The truth is all about, according to the power of God's word upon us, endeavoring to rise up and over the obstacles of life that we might press on. The truth is all about not yielding to our own private excuses, which we all have, why we ought not to sow to spiritual things. You know, brothers and sisters, if we were to examine ourselves, we all know that there are things in the truth that we really ought to have sown to, that sometimes we've promised ourselves that we would do, but somehow we've never quite got there. Husbands and wives that have always promised that they would pray together, who never quite started. Husbands and wives that were going to read a book together one night a week as a special treat, who never somehow get the book chosen. Families that were going to do the daily readings and some special Bible marking each week as their children grew, that somehow never got the marking project underway. Service in the ecclesia that we were going to render, but unfortunately clouds came along and there was wind, you see. All the people in the meeting that we said we must try and visit, and then they died, and we never quite got to see them. Aren't our lives full of reasons why we haven't quite managed to start sowing in this or that matter? You see what verse 5 says? As thou knowest not what is the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. Now, you see, the word spirit here is probably better the way of the wind. A farmer doesn't know how the wind works. He knows what it can do, but he doesn't know how it works. A farmer doesn't know how the bones grow in the womb of her that is with child. And by the way, the word her in verse 5 isn't just a woman, it's the female of any species. So it could be the animals on the farm, you see. It could be the creatures of the farm that are bringing forth their young, bringing forth their calves, increasing his flocks and his herds. A farmer doesn't know how it all happens. Any more than we understand the mystery of God's work in our own lives in developing the spirit of his character within us, we don't know, do we? We don't quite know how it all works. It's part of the secret mysteries of God. But there is one thing a farmer knows. He may not know the mysteries of exactly how the seed germinates and how the harvest is brought forth. He may not know the secrets of the wind or the mysteries of the womb. But a farmer knows one thing, and he knows it absolutely. It's actually, we don't need to turn it up, but it's actually in Matthew chapter 7 in the reading that we had tonight. I'll just quote it to you. It's Matthew chapter 7 verse 16. It's the words of the Lord. A farmer knows this, you see. When the Lord said, "Ye shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles?" Now, you see what the Lord was saying? What the Lord was saying was this. Whatever the mysteries are that bring forth harvest, there's one infallible rule that a farmer knows. And that is that seed will always yield according to its own kind. Farmer knows that. Do you see what I mean? If he sows wheat, he knows that he will not reap olives. He knows he can only reap wheat if that is what he has sown. Now, do turn to Galatians chapter 6, because here's the Apostle Paul's exhortation upon that fact of life. The fact that seed infallibly yields according to its kind. The one thing that the farmer is certain of. He doesn't know how the crop will come forth. He doesn't know with what extent it will come. He doesn't know the size of the harvest, but he does know that whatever seed he's used, that it will multiply according to its own kind. Now here's the lesson of that then in Galatians chapter 6. Verse 7, "Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. Seed yields according to its kind. If we sow to the flesh, we will reap the flesh, says the apostle. If we sow to the Spirit, we will reap the Spirit. It's infallible." You ever stop to wonder, brothers and sisters, why Paul says what he does say in verse 7? Why do you think the apostle Paul says, "Be not deceived"? Well, you see, I think it's because we are. That just as we believe secretly in life that we can defeat the law of nature concerning sowing sparingly and yet somehow reaping bountifully, so we also think in life that somehow we can sow seed of one kind and reap a crop of another kind. You can't, says the apostle. Seed yields according to its kind. Every farmer knows that. Now think about the lessons of this and how appropriate as we begin our Bible school together. You see, what this means is that if, for example, our life is spent in reading books that are not of the truth, if our life is spent reading the literature that is not of the truth, we all know that literature is according to its kind, don't we? That some literature is holy and noble and inspiring and helpful, and some books are not like that at all. And you see, what the apostle is saying is that don't ever imagine that you can read ungodly books and reap godly thoughts. Because you can't, you see. Seed yields according to its kind. I think it was Brother John Carter, wasn't it, that said, in a beautifully expressed phrase, the mind is insensibly affected by the stream of thought passing through it. So that if our mind is devoted to the literature of the world, we will reap worldly thoughts. Don't ever imagine that you can escape. You can't. Seed yields according to its kind. What leisure activities do we have? How do we spend our spare hours? What sort of music do we listen to? You see, we know that in all these areas of our lives, that we're really what we're doing, whatever we read, whatever we listen to, wherever we go, what we're really doing is sowing seed, you see. And it will bring forth a crop. And it will be according to the kind of seed that we've sown. How careful we should be, brothers and sisters, what kind we sow. We can only have godly minds and godly hearts at the kingdom if we've sown godly seed. And godly things are not to be found in worldly ways, you see. So we ought not to be deceived. We sow in trust and hope of an increase according to its kind, and then we take care that we sow the right type of seed. Come and have a look at the final verse of Ecclesiastes chapter 11 in this section. The last of these little proverbs, you see, in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, and this time in verse 6, because here is the conclusion of the matter, as it were, as Solomon sums up his thoughts. He says in the 6th verse, "In the morning sow thy seed, and in the evening withhold not thine hand. For thou knowest not whether shall prosper either this or that, or whether they both shall be alike good." Now you see, what verse 6 says is this. In fact, Rotherham's translation changes one word, but in so doing, I think makes a very significant difference, you see, because Rotherham's translates verse 6 as follows. He says, "In the morning sow thy seed, and until the evening withhold not thine hand." So you see, what the proverb is saying is this. We begin to sow our seed in the morning, and we should still be sowing in the evening, says the proverb. "Until evening withhold not thine hand." Now what's the morning time? Well, the morning time of our lives is our youth, isn't it? So what a good exhortation for young people as they come to the Bible school at this time. When you're young is the time to begin sowing to the things of the truth. Don't ever imagine that that comes later on in life. No, it starts now, says Solomon. In the morning time of life, we must begin to sow to the things of the Spirit. We've got to develop habits, you see. Those older will know the truth of this. You see, I think young people imagine they've got so much time ahead of them to start sowing to the things of the truth later on. And 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, the years roll away. "I can do all that later," says the young person. No, you can't. Funny things happen in life, you know. You get married and you blink and you're 40. And all of a sudden the intentions that you had of sowing to the things of the Spirit have disappeared and 20 years have gone. And what young people need to realize is that those early years before 20 are probably the years when we do establish our habits for life. If you're not sowing to the Spirit by that time, you may not be sowing in 20 years either. You might be, but you might not be too. Because habits are formed, you see, in the morning. "In the morning sow thy seed," says the proverb. "And until the evening, withhold not..." You know, brothers and sisters, one of the most comforting and exhortational things in ecclesial life is seeing older people at the meeting that are enthusiastic, that are still sowing to the things of the Spirit. In my ecclesia, we've got a group of about 10 brothers and sisters that are in their mid-80s to mid-90s. about 10. And then we go to two couples at 60, and then to my own age group, which is, of course, considerably more youthful than that. So we've got this little group, you see, of older ones. And you know, brothers and sisters, they put us all to shame. They're there every Sunday morning. They're there for every public lecture. They're there for every Bible class, every fraternal, every special effort. They're always there. They're there before us. They talk about the truth with enthusiasm. And here we've got old people who are still sowing to the things of the truth and have not withheld their hand even in the evening time of their lives. How wonderful that is in an ecclesia. How encouraging to see. How marvellous. And it starts when we're young and ought to still be there when we're old, says the proverb. So you see, the lesson of verse 6 is that we've got to learn to sow with diligence and with persistence throughout all our life. You never ever do stop really sowing to the truth, do you? You know, I think one thing that would help us in this is if only we could be transported, just for a moment of time, mind you, just temporarily, forward to the day of judgment, so that we could all see the size of our harvest. Do you think that would help us? In terms of how well we've sown? How many of us will advance to the judgment seat and shake our head and say, well, we clearly have sown far too much in the truth? No, I don't think many of us will say that, will we, in the time of judgment? Most of us will probably be shocked at how small the harvest is. If only we could have known that earlier. Perhaps we might have sown with more diligence. Well, now is the time to make those commitments that we give ourselves in the things of the truth. So there it is, you see, brothers and sisters. Verse 1, to sow with commitment and sacrifice. Verse 2, to sow with generosity and liberality. Verse 3, to sow with patience and endurance. Verse 4, to sow with earnestness and zeal. Verse 5, to sow in trust and hope. Verse 6, to sow with diligence and persistence. This is the very character of our God, he who first sowed his word upon the face of the waters. And now as we come to the emblems of our Lord's appointing, do we not gaze in bread and wine upon that one who was our supreme example of sowing to the things of the truth? Is not this the life story of the one who, even at the age of 12, was astounding the doctors with his knowledge of the law, and when asked what he was doing, said, "Wist ye not that I must be about my Father's business?" Already he was sowing to his Father's will and purpose with commitment and sacrifice. Is not this the life of the one who in matters of prayer, in matters of teaching, in matters of helping, in matters of healing, sowed with generosity and liberality of spirit, and who when asked why said, "My Father worketh hitherto, and I work"? Is not this the one before us who learnt throughout all the circumstances of his own patience and endurance of spirit? This one who had to endure the rain clouds of the opposition of the Pharisees, who had to see his disciples leaving him, the fall of Judas like a tree across the very vineyard of his disciples, but who pressed on and who prayed to his Father, "Father, holy Father, keep through thine own name those whom thou hast given me, that they may be one even as we are." Is not the one before us in the bread and wine the one who approached his Father and said, "Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me," and then later cries in John 18, "The cup which my Father hath given me, shall I not drink it?" This is the man who sowed with earnestness and zeal all his life and sweat drops of blood to prove his earnestness, brothers and sisters, in yielding obedience to his Father's will. Isn't this the one who cried in John chapter 12, "Now is my soul troubled, Father, for what shall I pray? Save me from this hour. But for this cause came I unto this hour. Father, glorify thy name." He sowed in trust and hope of divine redemption and of divine recognition. Is not this the one before us now, brothers and sisters, who began as a little boy saying, "Wist ye not that I must be about my Father's business," and who at the end of his life, as he hung upon the cross, was still crying out, "Father, forgive them. Father, it is finished. Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit." Who right till his dying breath was sowing to the things of the truth after the spirit of his own God. Yes, brothers and sisters, this is the man who we make vow now to follow. This is the man that we are asked to imitate, who perfectly manifested his Father's character, and we are now asked to follow his. Let us eat bread and drink of wine, and as we are doing so, brothers and sisters, this day, let us renew our vows of dedication before our God. Let us sow.